Hey, Phil, welcome to the Contractor Fight. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Tom. Thanks for having me on today.
I'm glad to have you on. This has been several months in the making. Last time we talked about this, you were out here at my place. And if I recall, we were stuck on a mountain with when my truck broke down.
It was hard to breathe in the tall mountain, just trying to push that car. So that was, sometimes those things happen and they make just for the best memories. I mean, there is guaranteed I will never forget my time with you on that mountain. Just very memorable. Lots of fun, lots of laughs.
Well, I have a video clip of you dragging your suitcase behind you in the ice and snow, walking down the mountain that one neighbor guy of mine was going to drive us down.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That was fun. So you were out here. We had mountaintop marketing event in the Contractor Sales Academy that we had put on, and you were one of the speakers that we brought out. And you talked about a topic that's actually probably one of the most popular topics when it comes to contractors, because they all talk about how they need to have better systems and processes in place. And that was kind of what you kicked us off with that day. And just kind of the what and the how and the why it's important and just kind of that whole thing. So so I'd love to just kind of dig into that here a little bit today if you're down with that.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. When we talk about systems, it's such a loaded word, and it can represent a lot of – I would ask that the people listening to this take a mental note. When I say we're going to talk about systems, just take a quick mental note on what the first feeling is that comes to mind, because some guys are going to feel – super excited. They're ready to go. They got their pen and paper in hand and they're ready to talk about systems. Other guys are scared to death. And I fell into that latter category. And that's what took me so many years to get all my systems in order, is because they scared me, because I heard so much about them. And also because there's a little bit of a perfectionism in people. And I think that's what holds them back from creating systems. Lots of times we look at our business and we know we can make improvements in multiple areas. And so we get our pen to paper and we start writing down all the things that need to be changed. And we come up with this list that's pages and pages long, what we can do in our office, in our sales, in our production. And then we get deflated because this list is just so long. Where do we begin? Where do we begin to tackle this? And so we learn to associate creating systems with this long, arduous task list project. And I want to immediately at the beginning just take that off the table and let you know that's a common way people go about it, but it's not the right way. So we're going to try to simplify it and make it a little bit easier for guys that are just getting started creating some systems and talk to you about just what that means.
Well, I think it's important also to note that you already have systems. Okay. They're just maybe not the intentional ones that you want. You know, if somebody calls you and you scribble their number down in a scrap piece of paper and throw it onto your dashboard, that's a system.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, I find a lot of times when I have this conversation with contractors, they're actually relieved at some point to realize that, okay, yeah, I do already have systems in place. I just need to make sure that they're the ones that I want. So what would you, if you could wave a magic wand over the whole contracting world and every contractor had to be totally dialed in on one processor system across the board, which one would it be if you could choose one?
If it was just one, three would have been an easier answer.
I know, that's why I asked you one.
Just one, I would say a bookkeeping system, because fundamentally, at your core, your ability to understand where your money is going and what it means in terms of percent and what the percentage of it relative to your revenue, how much your materials cost in a percentage form relative to how much the whole job. You spent 30% on materials, 20% on materials. Your labor was 20%. Your overhead was 25%. Knowing your numbers without knowing anything else will always drive you forward in a profitable direction. You may, you know, other systems are going to make it easier, make the system work faster, but you've got to know your numbers. So I would say to begin, step one, a bookkeeping and an accounting system. And they can be different. I want to clarify that accountants aren't the best people to necessarily keep your accounting system. They are preparing you for the tax season. I'm talking about optics, a dashboard of all your numbers that gives you feedback. Look, if I pulled a tricycle onto the center of a room and I said, who here can ride this tricycle? Chances are everybody could get up, sit on the tricycle and figure out that you have two handles, two pedals, and if you pump the pedals and turn the handles, this thing moves. But if I pulled in a Navy jet plane and said, who here can fly this? You're going to go in the cockpit and you're going to see thousands of buttons and panels and lights and boards and switches and things that you can do. And without the right knowledge of what all these buttons mean, you're not going to know how to fly this plane, how to fire the weapons, how to make it do what it needs to do. And that's what I want you to think about with your bookkeeping. You need a set of optics, a dashboard that gives you information that allows you to make decisions. That most basic information includes ratios, some very key ratios. How much did you pay in labor versus how much was the total job? How much did you, what was your material cost relative to the total job? And what was your overhead cost? And then you want to know your time on the job. You want to be measuring the hours that you estimated versus the actual hours. So you're always tracking what you're estimating, what your actual is, and then you're studying the difference between the two. Were you high? Were you low? Where can you improve? And if you do this over the course of, and I'm telling you, if you do this over the course of 30 days, let's say you do a project every other day, you have 20 days in a month, let's say you do it over 10 projects in 30 days, you will be amazed at how quickly you can take unprofitable circumstances and make them profitable in the absence of any other system out there.
Awesome. So you had said it would have been easier if I asked for three processes. What would the other two be, just quickly?
Well, the reason is I look at a business and I break it down between what happens in the office, what happens in production, and what happens in sales. So that kind of – the bookkeeping kind of covers the office end of the systems. On the production side, I would highly recommend a job jacket system. And this is a set of documents that travel with every new project. So from the time a new project is sold, you have all the critical documents that you're going to need. And for an example, in a landscaping project, you're going to need things like a change order form, a final walkthrough form, how to care for your new lawn form, instructions on how to care for the new project. The crew is going to need a scope of work written. They're going to need a material list. So these documents, and there's about seven or eight documents that go in there, get inserted into an actual physical clear job jacket. They show up in the morning in our foreman's inbox. So he comes to work on a Wednesday, sees his job order, work order for the day, pulls it out, and then anything he needs for that project is in there. Any instructions, any materials, everything is outlined in there. All the critical documents that need to be signed by the customers throughout the process are in there. They get returned there. That's where receipts that are collected for the job get stored. And once the job is complete, that jacket will return to the office. If they've paid by check, there will be a final check stapled to the final walkthrough form. Otherwise, there will be a form that shows that they've paid by credit card. And then it can be filed as a completed project. If you keep these job jackets in order, you review them at the next meeting, meaning the last step is you determine your actual versus your estimated profit. And that is what your leader, whether it's your foreman or your head sales guy, whoever's responsible for doing that tracking, what they're held accountable for, that's the meeting, that's a conversation that has to take place that's valuable. Did we hit our numbers and why? Or didn't we and why?
Awesome. So let me ask you this. What do you think it is that holds so many guys back from actually putting a process that they want to happen in place? Like what do you see as, you know, the big roadblock?
Well, I would say the biggest roadblock is usually some sort of lack of the biggest excuse is the lack of resources. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough money. I don't have the right people in place to be able to do this. If I only had my guys aren't smart enough to figure this out. And then the biggest owner's block that I think holds people back is fear. I think that there's a lot of fear around this. Like, wow, this is a big change. Things are going kind of good. You know, things are going good. And good is, and I think I've heard you say this, is the enemy of great. When things are going good, we tend not to focus on it. They're good enough. I'm comfortable. To do this, to step out, to create something like this is going to, if it's not uncomfortable, it's not being done right. There will be uncomfortable. Whenever something is uncomfortable, there's almost always a sacrifice involved, because you can't go do your normal day the way you've been doing it and still have time, that resource that we talked about, to do this. So where does the time to do this come from? Well, you may have to wake up an hour earlier every day. You may have to stay up an hour later every day. You may have to be more sensitive to the people that you're saying yes to. And you may have to start learning to say no to some people, because you have to get focused and be like, I see so clearly why having this bookkeeping system is important that I am going to put my blinders on, and I'm not coming out of my office until I have this bookkeeping system down, because it is that important for my company to have it. So you have to get over the fear of what it's going to be like when people went to say no to somebody, what it's going to be like when you get pushback, because sometimes people that have been with you a while don't like change. Like, whoa, what do you mean you're going to be tracking our actual hours now? What does that mean to me? Am I in trouble? I'm telling you, I'm working as hard as I can. You got my word. You know how I work. I work my best. But if you start tracking my hours, what if this happens? What if that happens? Remember, this is something that is a correctional tool. You're not creating these systems so you can fire people. You're creating them so you can make everybody perform at a better level and understand yourself where some of the disconnects are.
Well, you know, every successful organization, businesses, athletic teams, whatever, they work a process, and there are certain things that, you know, habits that need to be created or routines that need to be followed. And I find that you brought up our people being like, oh, screw that, I don't want to do that. You know, we've never done it this way before and all that other stuff is, you know, the other day I actually wrote a post in one of my other groups, and it's funny. The title of it was Don't Rescue Your People from Their Commitments. And so I'll give you a couple examples here. If I have a foreman, when somebody becomes a foreman, they are committing to be 100% responsible for the job and everything that needs to happen on and around that job. And that means, you know, setting the job up, closing the job out, keeping track of the paperwork, keeping track of the hours, making sure the customer has a great experience, making sure the crew is safe, making sure that the job comes in at or under budget, and all these other things. And so many times as owners, we don't, we'll put a process in place. We'll go, this is how it's going to go. And then yet we don't, we rescue them from that commitment that they need to make as a foreman by not having a regular weekly meeting where they give an accounting for what's going on that job, as an example. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense.
And so then you never get the process off the ground. You never take the time to work through the kinks. You know, you might have put it on paper and this is how we're going to do things, but if you don't truly make it a priority that we are going to measure this stuff, we're going to talk about this stuff, and you, foreman dude, you know, you are going to be the one that answers for what's happening on here and how you follow the process.
Well, and I think that's where the leadership component comes in. You know, there are people it's funny to have the conversation about natural leaders versus learned leaders. I'm definitely a learned leader. I mean, everything I learned about good leadership, I had to read in a book, put into practice, make some mistakes. But I will say that that is one of the places owners fall short all the time. And when we get a lot of questions where people come to us with any particular problem, I'm having a problem with an employee or with a customer or with billing or with invoicing, and I'm always in the back of my mind listening for ways that that links directly to the owner. And you said it perfectly. If you go through all this work to create a system, you've decided that you're going to hunker down in your office and not reappear for 2 days. You don't shave, you don't shower, you just get this system done. And you emerge with angelic lights in the background. You're like, here is the system. It is ready to go. You call in that first meeting. You tell everybody about it. You get them all pumped up. You're billing. You're selling that vision. Why does everybody need to be excited about it? And then you fizzle and you wiggle out. You don't keep them updated on little minor changes. They ask you a question about it, like, hey, you know, I've got a question about this or about that. And you're like, yeah, I'll get back to you. If you go right back to being busy again, you have got to schedule the time to make yourself available to your crew. So if you have a new system coming out, you should have a meeting once. We should be having a meeting once a week anyway. That definitely needs to happen. But what you talk about at that meeting should be this new system. So what I don't want you to do is go out and introduce 7 new systems all at the same time. You're going to set it. It's going to be a disaster. Take one system at a time, set it up, let it run for a couple weeks, and it constantly getting feedback, and make sure you are just super available. Treat them like you would treat a customer. You know, when you're on the middle of a job and your customer calls and it's 6 p.m. and you're at your kid's baseball game and you know you're on that job, how many times do you say, I'm sorry, I got to step away just for 1 second. Mm-hmm. Yes, can I help you? Because you know you're in the middle of the job. You know a question is going to be important. You got to take that call. Well, this is the same way. If it's a question about the system, you've got to get to that answer. The faster you answer this, you're going to build trust. If your team can trust you to carry you through the kinks and to help you feel comfortable that this change is worth it, then the next system that comes out, they're going to know you got their back. You're there to help them. You're not there to catch them in doing something wrong and fire them. You're there to be a mentor and a guide and a coach and a leader.
You know, I'm thinking back to when I had my painting company outside of Chicago, and one of the things that I think we did really well, and full disclosure here, was probably more my business partner than me. He oversaw the field and the guys and stuff like that. He had a weekly meeting like clockwork, and in that weekly meeting with our crews, and it was basically our foreman meeting, he would actually bring them in to the process making. Okay, so let's say, hey, we got to figure out a better way to set up jobs. I don't know, just pick something, right? Or how are we going to start a job? How are we going to close out a job? What is our process going to be? And he threw it on the table and said, okay, guys, what would a successful job closeout look like? And everyone starts sharing. Everyone starts giving their opinions. And he's taking notes. And he's like, hey, I'm going to put down a first draft of what this process is going to look like, what our checklist is going to look like or whatever. And then next week I'll bring it back to you guys and we'll tear it apart again. And we'll make it ours. And by doing that, you're giving your guys ownership. So don't feel like, and I totally know what you meant earlier when you're like, you hold yourself up, you don't shower, you don't eat, you come out with a system. And if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. But also remember, you're going to get way more participation and ownership if your people can be part of the creation.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Keeping them, because people don't like change, unless it's change that they help bring about. Mm-hmm. You know, I do think keeping them informed, bringing questions to the fore, and most, if you recognize a pain in your business, your people recognize the same pain. I mean, if you constantly get to the end of the job and you have extra unused materials left over, and now you got to scramble the next day to return them and try to get money back, or you have to explain to the customer, no, those don't really belong to you. We quoted you for, you know, 1,000 square feet, and we ordered enough to do 1,200 square feet. You know, all these little things that come up. And the point is, if you want to run efficiently, you want to have enough materials for the job, but you don't want to have unused, unopened containers left over. Why would that be? How can you make every, how can you solve that problem? That is something that would be a great idea. Go to your team. Go to the leaders of your company. Go to your crew. Always be open for suggestions. They will enjoy solving these problems with you. In fact, their input might likely be far more valuable than your input because they're there on the job every single day and they see things that are happening that they know could be better. And sometimes they're just afraid to speak up. So ask that question. Definitely.
Awesome. So let's dig in a little bit to you've been in the industry a long time, been a contractor a long time.
Yep.
Give us a snapshot of maybe what your business looked like in the early days before you kind of got this process thing down, and then what were the fruits of actually, you know, nailing it?
Well, I started in 2002, and we started off as a spent 1 year as a cleaning company. We cleaned swimming pools and we cleaned apartment units. I was just very eager to get into a landscaping business, but did not have the money to go out and buy trucks and equipment and do what I needed to do. So an opportunity sort of fell into my lap. I was living in an apartment at the time, and I got to know the property manager, and he was in the process of firing his cleaning company and the people that did his pool. So I have a very big background in chemical pool technology and pool maintenance and pump replacement. So I offered my services there, and I said, well, you know, we can also, I mean, how hard could it be to clean apartments? So we took over the apartment cleaning. And that was really very interesting because it was an easy, low overhead business that earned us just a ton of money. There were 987 units, three different swimming pools, three different clubhouses. So we worked full time all week long. And very early on, I realized I had to simplify things. So my first system after hiring two people was where we inventoried and stored the chemicals. We rented a garage there and we kept the chemicals. We introduced a walkie-talkie system. There were no cell phones back then that we would talk on regularly. So we had a walkie-talkie system that traveled throughout the whole property. They'd come in the morning, they'd have a list with all the keys of the units that they had to clean, and we would communicate by walkie-talkie. They were paid a flat rate based on how big the unit was, if it was one bedroom, two bedroom, or three bedroom. Now that only lasted about 9 months. A new manager came in, and what's very common in the apartment rental industry is that they have tons of overhead of management. And typically when a new manager comes in, the first thing they do is they want to switch vendors. They like to bring in their own people, which was fine because at the time we were moving, our home was being built and it was 35 miles away. So it actually worked out great. But I had this nice chunk of money that I was able to take and go out and buy a truck and buy some landscaping equipment and create some magnetic signs. So over the next few years, we did what a lot of people do. We did yard cleanups. We installed mulch. We mowed lawns. We sent flyers out door to door. We also used Service Magic, which is now Home Advisor, to get a lot of projects. And it built very quickly. Within 3 years, we had almost more than tripled our business. So I think our second year in business, we were about $350,000. And our third year, we were at close to $800,000. So I was growing very, very fast. So I had to add a lot of people in a short period of time. And each time I added a person, I had to add a truck and equipment to go along with that person. We had a lot of revenues, but we also had a lot of expenses with that. Everybody got paid on W-2, everything over 40 hours a week was logged and tracked and paid overtime. And I created a real, on the surface, it was something that I could easily pat myself on the back for. Look at all of our big, beautiful trucks. We made for a great website photo, but I was running ragged. We had close to $1.5 million business, and I'm bald, so I've already pulled all my hair out. But if I had hair, I would have been pulling it out at that time. And it was because you really forget that, like, I didn't exist in the field anymore. I mean, there wasn't even time for me to go to the field. Now, I would sell jobs still, but outside of that, I was in the office most of the time, just balancing books and keeping everything flowing as easily as possible. I had an office manager, I had a sales manager, and I had a production manager. I did have systems in place. This was my first experience in introducing new systems, and they worked with varying degrees of success. Some of them worked very well. Other people I found were impossible to keep tabs on. My production manager was a very difficult person to work with. I probably should have fired him within the first 2 months of him working for me, and he ended up working for me for well over a year before I made the decision to let him go. And that's because I didn't know how to be a good leader yet. So I was a great salesman. That's what helped build the business. I was a great salesman internally. I was good at getting motivation from people. But there was a lot of pushback when it came to the systems. And at that point, when you're $1.5 million company, you have to have these systems in place, and you'll have people coming to you. My former sales manager, he said, well, you know, I never did all of this stuff. They would almost talk to you like it was stupid. Like, I never had to keep a sales pipeline report. I never had to log anything in a CRM, a customer relationship management software. Why are we doing this? I was constantly saying, you know, we're doing this because we got to know when to follow up with people. They say no today, but they want us to call them in 3 months. Call them in 3 months. Let's do it. Let's keep them in our database. So what happened that was not a choice of mine was 2007, 2008, we have a major meltdown in our economy. And that just by nature forced me to have to downsize. So I got rid of all of the people, most of our staff. I went down to 3 trucks, and all of a sudden, I got to tell you, I could breathe. I was like, whoa, this is nice. And it was less than a year later. We were at about $1.5 million in revenue when that happened. We were back up to about $700,000 less than a year later. And I had 4 people working for me. I took all the best of these systems and I built it correctly. I got a chance to do it from the – now I had already been through it once and the experience of it. I got a chance to edit each one, make it more simple where it needed to be more simplified, make it more user-friendly, and really just from a new hire coming through, they could get right on board with this. It wasn't trying to change the whole culture at one single time. And since then, we have been running – we still run today with – the same bookkeeping, job jacket system, sales pipelines, all of these are in full effect at our company, and nobody questions it. It just is, and it's the system that runs it. And so there's very little confusion about if I go out into the field and say, how much time is left on this job, I will quickly get an answer like, oh, we've got 38 hours left, or we're going to be done by this afternoon, or we're not going to make it, and here's why. I mean, it's all very proactive conversations. So that is – so we're still, again, pushing the $1 million mark, but with far, far less resources. And the only thing that changed that was our efficiencies.
So I'm going to go out on a limb and also say that when you actually shrunk in revenue and got your act together in the processes, your profit went up.
Oh, yes, by far. Yes, by far. And we see well above industry normal profits. I mean, our profits easily are in the 30 to 40% margin. And there's going to be some people that shake their head and be like, no way, that's not possible. It's absolutely possible. Because the industry averages are going to be in the teens. And there's a lot of companies out there that are high volume companies that are bringing in $5 million in revenues or more, and they're consistently pulling out 16, 18% margins. And I think for me, that feels like an awful lot of work for a very little bit of return. And not only that, you're adding all the headaches of it. You've got to babysit that many people. I have very few people to babysit. I have a couple crews that I have to keep on board and working in this system. And I get plenty of time for my family, for vacation, for all the things that I really want to do in life.
That's good stuff. You know, one thing I want to make sure people understand is that when you have processes in place, one of the other benefits, of course, you're going to be more profitable and things like that. But one of the other huge benefits is when you have a process and you have a job that doesn't go well, it's much easier to identify where the breakdown happened. Time and time again, I would be able to look back at a project and go, okay, this is actually the point in time where we dropped the ball. You know, that maybe we didn't do a proper handoff from the sales side to the operations side. You know, we half-assed it or whatever. So, you know, guys listening to this, take the time to put processes into place and be disciplined in those processes. Like, don't just create the process, put it on paper, and then expect it to happen. You are going to have to, I guess, Phil, it's kind of like, you know, getting into working out or something or eating right. Like, you're going to have to really be committed to seeing it through, or else it's never going to work.
Yeah, that's I like your analogy relating it to working out. As it happens, I am in the process of training for my first full marathon ever.
Well, that's just stupid, man. That's way too far to run, man.
Well, I'm realizing that. So yesterday was my 18-mile run. And, you know, something magical happens after about the half marathon mark, after about the 12-mile mark even, where you do realize there's something a little bit ridiculous about this. So what I've noticed when I go on these runs that are now three and a half hours long is there's always a point where I want to quit because it's hard. And I think to myself, why do I want to quit? This is the question that I always ask myself. And I check in with my legs. I'm like, okay, it's like I'm talking to the manager of my legs. And I'm like, are you guys okay? And they're like, check, we're good. We're still strong. Okay, upper body, are you feeling good? Yeah, there's some pain, but it's feeling good. It comes down to this. The only reason I want to quit is because something in my head is telling me to quit. That voice, that negative voice that tells you, you've done enough, don't worry, this is good enough, you're in comfort, because you're crossing the threshold of the comfort zone. And that's the hardest part. I mean, think of it like a rocket leaving Earth's gravity. Anytime you implement a system, anytime you decide to run a marathon, anytime you decide to take on a huge new challenge for yourself, you're going to have to get through that. You're going to have to overcome that threshold of uncomfortableness, that point where it's easier. Your that voice in your mind is going to tell you it's easier. Just stop here. You did it. You got close enough. And if you're ever looking for a good book to read, there's a book called 200, I think it's called 212. What happens at 212 degrees Fahrenheit? And we know that water boils at 212 degrees Fahrenheit. And it talks about what happens at 211.9 degrees. And that is absolutely nothing. Most people stop right at the point where water's about to boil. Most people give up right at the point where they're about to turn the corner and do something insanely successful for themselves. So that's, you know, my soapbox speech for the day is, don't stop. Keep putting one foot in front of the other and keep paying attention to yourself. So when you want to stop, the most important thing to do is acknowledge, I feel like stopping. Why? And then check in. Keep asking yourself why and get to the root. I feel like stopping because I'm afraid, because I've never been here before, because what if people don't like my system? What if it doesn't work? And I'm not saying that they all do work, but in your failures, you continue to learn. That's why you meet and you revise these documents. So just keep moving forward, and you will realize that level of dream level of success that you've had for so long.
Well, good stuff, man. Well, Phil, listen, if somebody's listening to this and they want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
You can reach me at by email's best. It's Phil, P-H-I-L, at dirtmonkeyuniversity.com.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you hanging with us today. And I encourage you guys to reach out to Phil if this is an area of your business that you want some help in, if you want a speaker to come in or anything like that. Phil's your man. He came in and delivered for us, and we really appreciate it, man. So appreciate you. Have an awesome day. Travis, bring in the guitars, and we'll talk to you all later.